This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're home alone. You have an uneasy feeling in the darkness, like someone or something is watching you. Why is it suddenly cold in this room? You hear footsteps, whispers, or even laughter. You go to check. You feel a presence behind you. And then the fear sets in. I'm K-Town, and you're listening to Paranormal Fears.
One of them is out. The other one is coming out towards the latter part of the year because the copywriting is taking so much longer with all of this COVID stuff and everybody's working from home. So that one's not out yet. It's called Colors of Heaven, Beginnings Never End. It's a beautiful story about the act of dying, death, and afterlife that goes with that. I watched my mother pass. And because of my ability to see interdimensionally, I saw her come out of her body and all of the workings and the beautiful way that heaven opened up. And I was able to look in it. And I've seen that more than once as a nurse in end-of-life care. But anyway, with the omnipresent books, the second book is being, I published it, I printed it, everything. I mean, I had to pay $10 a book to even print it. So I'm selling it, you know, for like $18 because it's free shipping, and that's $3. So I'm only selling it off of my website, but it's really not getting that much attention. I think I've only, in the last year since it's been out, I've probably only sold 5 books.
All right. So, and that's the afterlife book, right?
No, that's Omnipresent, What Happened Next. Gotcha. There's a lot of people after Omnipresent, which was very straightforward, you know, no fluff. This is what it is. A lot of people came back and said, well, what happened to your family afterwards? So I started the second book where the first book left off with after what happened after the sale of the house, that I actually contacted the people that sold the house to me. And that was a whole nother horror story in itself.
Okay.
And then I went into some other things like the difference between spirits and ghosts. And always, I always put a self-help section at the end of the book for you to, you know, for them to determine on their own, because there is no, you know, a lot of people will come when you're in that desperate situation and say, oh, well, I can get them out of your house for $1,000. You'll pay it. You know, you'll find a way to pay it, and then they don't get them out. So I always put a self-help section in the back for people to determine whether they have ghosts or demons in their house and different things that they could do to neutralize negativity. And I actually have a method now that's going in my third book of the series, which I haven't started writing yet, but I have my little notes on of how to get them out. I just actually got a woman that was stuck in her home. She had passed away and she was practicing voodoo. She was Jamaican and practicing voodoo in the house, and a new family moved in and there were some weird things happening. And I actually went and helped her cross over while I was in Florida 2 weekends ago. So it was a beautiful thing. She was happy to cross over. She was lingering because her pet spirit was still on earth and she didn't want to leave the pet behind. So the pet went and she went. And I've got pictures of the whole thing because I do it with fire, and I have her in the pan. You can see her impression and you can see her pet's impression in the pan after the fire went out. So, you know, I want to help people with this because it's an unimaginable thing to have to go through. And there's not really that much help out there. They'll put you in a mental hospital and say you have schizophrenia, which is a whole nother story in my second book, too, about attachments on people that have schizophrenia, and I can see them. So I did a rotation. I went to further my degree as a nurse, and I had to do a rotation, you know, maternity, psych, all of that. And when I did my psych rotation, there was a young woman that had approached me, and she had claw marks on her that I recognized because a friend of mine got claw marks in the house that I had owned. And she was there for schizophrenia, but I could see the attachments on her back, and getting them removed helped her. I saw her a year later in the Walmart. She came up to me and she was off of her schizo meds. She was just on something for mild anxiety. But as I started to walk around the facility with my ability to see interdimensionally, I could pick out the drug addicts and alcoholics that were there. I could also pick out the people that were labeled with schizophrenia because they had attachments on them. So these voices that they're talking about hearing, they are really hearing because they are lost souls that are attached on them that they're carrying on their backs. And they are hearing these voices. So, but you know, you can't go up and say that to your doctor or your, you know, your teacher, oh, hey, she's not as have schizophrenia. She's got attachments on her back. If you take them off, she'll probably be okay. You know? So that's in my second book as well, talking about things like that. And also with addiction and how pain can, you know, cause addictions. It's also got sections on, you know, you'd be surprised when you're smoking or in a bar, how many dead alcoholics and people addicted to cigarette are standing around you just trying to sniff the fumes, because when people die,
you're talking about in spirit, like ghosts.
Yes, in spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have a headless guy with his head sitting on the bar trying to smell your whiskey. So, you know, and I mean, people don't realize that happens. So that's kind of what's in the second book.
I'm going to have you back.
The first book is where I started.
Wow.
I would love
you got to come back.
I've got actually, you know, several books doing, and also just the, and I know that we need to get on with this, but the third book in the series of Omnipresent, after I went through all of that, I actually moved into a townhouse that had 10 of them in a row. And most of the women living there were either college students or single women living there. And I was told by the cleaning lady who didn't clean that she didn't want to finish cleaning because there's a ghost in that townhouse that I was moving into. And I'm like, oh God, not again. You've got to be kidding me. This can't happen twice in a lifetime. Sure enough, there was. And this ghost, I actually have a picture of him. I took it with my own camera, so nobody can say it's been photoshopped. I took the picture myself, and nobody's touched it. It's been in my camera. But this naked man ghost that I have a picture of was going from townhouse to townhouse, crawling in bed with women and pulling their underpants down during the nighttime, because we all started talking, because I'm open. I'm like, hey, this place is haunted. Oh, my God. You know, I was in my room. I heard the tapping next to my bed, and then my cover started to pull off. So we all started talking to the women in the building, and it turns out it was happening to the majority of them. So, yeah, that's a whole nother interesting story that I'm writing the third book of the series on in itself.
And so let's go ahead and just pick up from this. Man, okay, I need to bring you back and talk about your young life. You know, I know you wrote this book about some frightening things that you and your family were going through, but before this happened, did your family ever talk about paranormal activity or believe in it or anything like that?
Well, I grew up in a haunted house. We lived three short blocks behind a hospital that was affiliated with a nursing home. And my sister and brother and I would see people in patient gowns walking in our hallway. And of course, when we brought it up, I was born in the 60s, so I'm old. And, you know, back then you didn't talk about those sorts of things because your family didn't want the neighbors, the Joneses, everybody talked about the Joneses, whoever they were, to know that you had people seeing things in your house. And of course, the threat of the men with white coats. So I learned very, very quickly to not talk about it, mostly because I was born and raised Presbyterian until my mom took a brief jaunt with the Jehovah's Witnesses. And I was about 10 years old at the time. My parents had gone through a divorce, and I had seen something in the house, and I had made mention of it. And she took me in front of the elders, and those people scared me so bad at 10 years old about those are demons that you're seeing. I mean, even if it was my grandmother, you know, I mean, somebody that's not frightening, but a very warm, welcome, you know, loving connection. They literally scared the bejesus out of me.
Well, wait a minute. Who are the elders?
The elders are like the ministers or the priests in a congregation of Jehovah's Witnesses. That's their title.
Okay. Good.
So they took me in front of their board. And I mean, told me terrible things were going to happen to me. I was going to die in Armageddon. That's pretty heavy for a 10-year-old, you know, to be standing there all by yourself, just shaking in front of these officials that are supposed to know everything. So I kind of shut down my ability. I tried to ignore it. I assumed that what they were saying was right. And I got pretty well at ignoring it, even though I would see glimpses of things. I would say, oh, no, that's a demon, you know, I don't want to go there type thing. So I got to
wait a minute. What about your brother? Because you said your brother was seeing it, too.
Oh, yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, my brother and I, just a little story. My brother and I were in my parents' master bedroom, and my brother was playing with Hot Wheels on the floor. And I was, of course, in my mom's jewelry box, dolling myself up as a little girl. And I'm turning to show my brother how beautiful I look. And he's staring in the corner of my parents' bedroom. And so I'm looking, and there's this misting kind of in the corner. And in that misting, it was a portal. My brother's best friend, John, stepped in to the mist, and then his family stepped in behind him, and he just stood there smiling. Well, my brother runs out of the room looking for my mom. You know, mom, John's in, you know, John, mom, you know, he's here with his family. My mom's like straightening herself, coming down the hallway. Well, what are they doing in my bedroom? Who let them in the house? And of course, when she got into the room, there was nothing there. And my brother got in trouble for that. And of course, I didn't open my mouth because I didn't want to get in trouble too, but I saw the same thing. So the next day, my brother goes to school. It had been spring break, and it was the first Monday back after spring break. And he was on the bus, and little John Moss, well, which that, anyway, was not there. And so they got to school, and he had him as his desk buddy right next to him. And he sits down at his desk. And again, John is not there. And the teacher stands in front of the classroom and sadly announces that John and his family perished in an accident the day before on their way home from vacation. So the day before was when that vision happened that my brother and I both saw at the same time. And it just one of those things that when my brother finally did end up going home, when he got off the bus and went home, my mother was speechless because my brother had told her what he saw in her bedroom in the corner, that John was coming in basically to just see my brother and to say goodbye, you know, that to let him, you know, see him one more time. And it wasn't, I mean, it couldn't be denied. Because like I said, I saw it the same thing too, at the same time. So anyway, that's some of the things where my brother and I paralleled on things. And again, seeing, you know, coming out of our bedroom and seeing a person in a patient's gown standing there, that's just standing there looking at you because they don't speak. They communicate telepathically. And of course, we don't communicate telepathically. We speak. So they're just kind of looking at you. So, you know, we kind of got used to that, and my older sister also, you know, saw things too. So,
wait a minute, I want to say, keep you right there for a second. That is it. Okay. Let me see here. I have several questions just about that experience. Let me go back to where you and your brother saw the patients in the gowns. You said they talk, but they talk in like, you know, telepathic way. Were they actually, I mean, were they coming through to you like clear, like a real person standing there? Or were they like the outline of them? How were you seeing them exactly?
Sometimes they would be very clear, but there was always a little bit of sheerness about them. And the thing is a lot of times too, when I see them, it's kind of like when you're walking up, like you're at the mall and you're walking up from the parking lot into a store and you see your reflection in the glass window. It kind of looks like that sometimes. And sometimes when they get closer, it's like a wavering to the air, like almost like gas fumes or steam off of a hot road when it's raining. There's a rippling effect to the air sometimes when they get very close, I can see them better at a distance, you know, versus up close in my face, but I might be able to see their feet and know that they're standing there and the other part that's rippling that way. But yeah.
they were just walking around in your house.
Yes.
Do you know why? I mean, was your house like a former hospital? I mean, but why were they in your house?
We were right behind the hospital.
Oh, gotcha.
We were right behind the hospital, and the hospital was connected with a nursing home. So, you know, you had people dying in the hospital, you had people dying in the nursing home. So I think that that's why, and not only that, there were Indian mounds on the other side of the hospital. So sometimes we would see Indians. So it was an area where, you know, Indians had been and things like that. And, you know, the thing with hauntings is that it's not about the house. It's not about it's about the ground that it's built on. You can have a brand new house. If it's built in the wrong place, it could be haunted because you built it on ground and you don't know what was under there 500 or 800 years ago. So, you know, that kind of thing. So that energetic thing kind of goes into play with it also.
Yeah. And okay, so go ahead and tell me some other things that were happening to you and your family growing up.
Well, those sorts of things happened. I you know, pans would rattle in the cabinets and the cabinet doors would open and close and you'd hear water running in the bathroom and then you'd come and it would be turned off, but yet you could see the water in the sink. So lots of things like that happened. It exacerbated my father's alcoholism where, I mean, his eyes would turn black in arguments with my mother and it would become very violent.
They witnessing the paranormal activity too?
They didn't say that they were. They didn't ever support us in what we were seeing. It's like, oh, nothing's there. Even if they had a feeling that it wasn't, a lot of parents do that. Even still, you know, their kid will see something. Kids don't have those filters in place that we do, you know, as adults. So a lot of children that are younger can see through the veils of the dimensions and they'll, like, they'll have a invisible friend or something like that, or they'll see things. And a lot of times when they come to parents, they'll say, oh, my gosh, you know, there's a man standing at the foot of my bed. And the parents will be like, oh, well, there's nothing there, you know, but yet the kid can see it. So and the one thing is, too, is the worst thing that a parent can say to a child when a child consistently comes more than once and says, there's somebody standing at my bed. There are two things to ask them. Number one, is it scaring you? And number two, is it asking you to do something that you know you're not supposed to do? Because it could be something demonic. And parents really, really need to ask that, but they're uncomfortable with it themselves. And so they'll tell them, oh, it's just Aunt Lulu, you know, coming to check on you or your guardian angel. Well, if it was Aunt Lulu wouldn't be scaring the bejesus out of them, shaking their bed in the middle of the night, waking them up. So, you know, there are spirits around that children can see too. Those filters kind of come more into place right before puberty. Any child that has more of a psychic ability that kind of goes semi-dormant during the puberty years and then it reopens, you know, as they get closer to later teens and early 20s, and then it comes full blown. So, and then it also depends on how they've been supported in their family or, you know, encouraged in that way, or whether they've been told, no, you know, what you're seeing, you're not seeing. So they have a tendency to go, you know, either way, oh, ghosts aren't real. Well, yeah, maybe not in your world, but I've seen ghosts. I've seen demons, you know, so face to face. And yeah, they do exist.
And man, I tell you what, I could have a 3-hour straight interview with you to really drill down on some of your experiences. I do want to give you ample time to talk about your book, because one thing that you do mention this is chapter 3, but I don't want you to start from there. You start talking about voices, like disembodied voices that was happening. And I do want you to please remind me to have you talk about that, or hopefully I'll make a note of it. But this particular house from this book here, this was when you were an adult and you moved in with your family at that time, correct?
Well, let me just say this. I was a single mother and I had my two older children that are now grown. I had a third one since then. But I mean, we bought that house, but it was haunted so badly, we never moved in. I owned the house for 8 months And it was so bad, we spent two nights there. And we never actually got to officially move in.
Well, what happened? What happened to make you, were you going in there and cleaning it and finding that out? Or were you just hearing about it?
No. Actually, what it happened, as a single mom, I had been looking for a house. And it took me about a year and finally stumbled upon this one. And the realtor stating to me, oh, this is too good to be true, should have resonated with me and I should have run then. But, you know, she showed me the pictures of this house. And I, you know, so many times I had waited a week to make an offer. And by that time, because of the price range that I was looking in on a single parent income, it wasn't a lot. So those homes would disappear quickly. This one was 2,400 square foot, two story, split level brick house on a dead end street, Florida flat lot. There was like a half of an acre of all mowed grass with a huge lot behind it that was somebody else's, but it was all grass. So it was a trick or treat neighborhood. So the houses are close enough that the kids can get lots of candy. I call that a trick or treat neighborhood. And when she showed me the papers, I thought the price was wrong. I mean, it was like $133. So I thought, well, no, this house could easily sell for $100,000 more than what they're asking. Is it near a dump or a sinkhole or paper mill, something stinky? You know, I thought there has to be something wrong with the location of the house for them to be, you know, asking such a low price. And, you know, I am religious. I do believe in God. And I said a prayer. I'm like, wow, you know, as a single mom, please, I would love to be able, because we were living in a single wide trailer. So I would love to be able to provide a home this grand for my children, and went ahead. And when the realtor and I got there for the first walkthrough, again, I had denied seeing the things that I'd been seeing for years because I was told that they were bad and wrong. And we had trouble with the lock. And the lock is a key piece in this story because there were two demons and a young man that had hung himself in the house, which was verified by the next door neighbor. The house was built in the 1970s, so it wasn't that old. With the lock thing, one of the demons would play with that lock. So when we went into the house, finally, after struggling to get the door open, walked into the foyer area. It's a split level house, so there were stairs descending and ascending off of the platform. And I'm waiting for the realtor to get the key out of the lock, because now that she's got it in and turned it, it won't come back out. And I started to venture up the stairs. The house, the people had moved out, so the house was empty. And so I started to go up, but out of my peripheral vision, as I'm walking up those stairs, I see a young man hanging in the stairwell. And it caught me off guard, and I gasped. And I'm like, why on earth would I be thinking of something so horrible? You know, this house is great, you know, so I ignored it. I did see it. I ignored it. But then again, like I said, later on, it was confirmed with the next door neighbor that the young man, well, the original owners that built the house, had committed suicide in the house by hanging himself in the stairwell. So I went to the top of the stairs. I'm looking into the room and, you know, I'm envisioning where I'm going to put my Christmas tree and all that stuff and my kids eating popcorn on the floor. And I felt this angry presence. But again, I'm like, no, it's your imagination. And not only that, you know, I'm a woman of good faith and I'm protected. And if, you know, I don't know why I'm feeling this, but no, this house is just, you know, too good to be true. Just like the lady said, it was beautiful. I mean, three bedroom, two bath. It had formal dining area, living room, breakfast nook, kitchen, family room. It was a nice house. So when I came back with my children that afternoon, because I wanted to bring them back to see it, and I knew, I mean, the house had not even been placed on the MLS yet. When my realtor called me, her colleague had just come back from taking pictures, and we actually got there before. So by the time the afternoon came, it was then on the MLS. And I wanted to make sure that nobody got the house before I had a chance to bid for it. And I wanted to have my kids' blessing. So took my kids back. My kids, of course, are running down the hallway picking out their bedrooms, and nobody wanted the small bedroom. So they asked to go downstairs, and I'm talking to the realtor about making this offer. And my daughter and son go down. My daughter comes back up within like 5 minutes, and she said, "Mommy, I don't want to move here." And I thought to myself, we've been living in a single trailer that you could fit four of in here. You know, what do you mean you don't want to move here? So I asked her, I said, what did you say? And she repeated it. I don't like this house. I don't want to live here. So at first I'm thinking, oh, you know, she's 13. She's realizing that she's going to be moving from her friends and yada, yada. So I ignored her and I told her, I said, well, this is not a decision for you to make. And she said, Mommy, there's something about this house that I don't like. And, you know, she didn't, you know, again, didn't want me to make that decision. So I went ahead and I bid and I said a prayer, I said, dear Lord, if this is meant to be my house, we found that another person had made an offer on the house already. So mine was a second offer. So I made an offer. And I said, if it's meant to be mine, then it'll be mine. And I got the call the next day that I had gotten it. So when the closing came to the house, I had been told by the realtor that the previous owner had to move because of a job transfer out of state, that they were, you know, eager beavers to sell because, you know, they were now paying two mortgages on two different houses and all of this information. But it turned out when they came for the closing, they were late for one thing, and there's a reason why. But the woman would not look me in the face. She stared at her feet the whole time during the closing, and I kept trying to, you know, get her attention. And I told her, I said, oh, thank you so much for this beautiful home. I'm going to put wooden flooring in it. And she said, well, that's what we wanted to do. But it turned out that they were still working at the same jobs. They were living with her parents. So all of what I had been told about the reason why they sold the house was not true. But again, I thought, well, maybe they just had some financial problems and I'm so lucky to get this house. I'm thrilled to get the house. I wasn't going to question it. So after the closing, I took the kids back to the house. And this time I'm having trouble with the key. And we get in, I bring along dinner to make for the kids, and they each bring an item to stake out their bedroom with. And my son brought his baseball bat, my daughter brought her Nintendo. And so they're down the hallway, and my daughter comes into the doorway of the kitchen. And she said, "What, Mom, you know, Mommy, what did you want?" And I told her, I said, I didn't call you. Yes, you did. You called me twice. And the first time you called me, I told you I would be there, you know, coming, or I'm in a minute. You'd be there in a minute. And you called me again. What did you want? And I said, no, I swear I didn't call you. And she's, you know, we banter back and forth for a little bit. And then my son comes in. He's peering underneath her arm into the kitchen. And he said, I heard you too. And I said, well, you know, my kids' names are their real names in the book. Brittany, you know, it's a popular name. We're on a dead end street. It's dinner time. Maybe there's another girl on the street named Brittany and her mom's out front yelling for her kid to come home and eat. I'm sure you'll meet this person and be good friends. Now, when I originally purchased the house, it was in March, and I did not want to change my kid's school because they only had 8 more weeks of school. I didn't want to take the chance of having records lost or whatever. And I thought, you know, the summer would give us a chance to move in. I could get some renovations done. It would give them a chance to meet kids in the neighborhood. So once they start their school year in a new school, they'll know a few people and it'll be a beginning of the year instead of dropping them in the middle, which is much harder for them. So, you know, I commuted back and forth, you know, to fix things and stuff like that. But after that had happened, I went back to the house a couple of days in a row to prepare things for the house. I was ripping up the carpeting myself to save money so I could get a better grade of flooring. I was on a single mom income, and I wanted, you know, so I did a lot of the work myself. But when I did have workers come in, I'm kind of skipping ahead a little bit. When I did have workers come in, I couldn't get them to stay past 2 o'clock. And I finally found out why it was the third one, because he was a friend of mine's cousin. So I actually got to ask what had happened. And there was some moving of tools. There was lights going on and off. His radio was turning on and off. And there were different things that made him run out of the house without even closing the windows. And this house had these odd shaped windows with this air conditioner in there to dry the flooring as he was putting them in, because it was very humid. And so because of that, I ended up having, and a lot of things happened in between that. different things happened, which are in the book. I ended up having to go back that night with my neighbor. I asked my neighbor, who's also in the book, and I asked her, I said, do you mind, you know, coming with me? I've got to go back to the house. Plus, I kind of wanted to show it to her. You know, I told her that I felt that there was a ghost in the house because I had seen things at that time. And I hadn't discussed it with my children yet, but they had been seeing things all along, and the dog wouldn't go in the house either. So, you know, I had asked her to go along with me to help me pull that air conditioner in from the window from a second floor and secure the house. I was working a bailer shift as a nurse on the weekends, and it was on a Friday, butt up against a weekend, and I didn't plan to return to the house until Monday. And do you want me to keep going, or do you? Is there anything that you?
No, go ahead.
Okay,
you're good.
Yeah, so when we got there, even though I WD-40'd the lock, the key was just stuck in the hole. I got the door open, but I couldn't get the key back out. And my friend, Ellen goes into the foyer, and she's standing there, and she said to me, she says, "Well, you're not going to leave me here and let the boogeyman get me." And she was mocking them, and they heard her, and they attacked her in that house while she was standing next to me in the kitchen to the point of bleeding. They clawed her on her stomach and on her back while we were in that house. I would.
Well, could she tell that was happening to
yes.
her, or did she not see or feel it till she left? Because sometimes people don't know it till later on.
Nope. And I have to say this. I would fight God for my children. Any mother would, if God came and said, okay, I'm taking them from you. We would, you know, I would fight God for my children. And I swear on my children's lives, what happened, happened. And people don't have to believe it. I was there. I saw it with my own eyes. We were standing. We had walked into the kitchen of the house. I was doing a wild horse theme in my daughter's room, and I had gotten these really nice carved Morgan horse heads to drape her valance over her window, and I wanted to show them to my friend. They were in the kitchen. So we went into the kitchen, and my friend was holding one in each hand, and I heard this buzzing sound. It kind of sounded like a didgeridoo, sound like wah-wah, but yet there was some static sound to it, and I had heard that sound once before when a demon had presented, when I had been in the house by myself. And so I'm hearing this noise, and I'm thinking I'm the only person hearing it. And my friend says, "What's that sound?" And I said, "Can you hear that?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, remember I told you that there's a ghost in the house, and we'll leave in a minute." And this wall of misting that smelled like a musty basement came moving towards us. And all of a sudden, my friend starts screaming. She says, "Oh my God, oh my God, it burns, it burns." She says, "What is it, a spider bite?" And my friend was rather large, so she couldn't reach her back to even fasten her bra strap. Her boyfriend had to help her do that in the morning. And she's like, "What is it?" She's trying to lift up her shirt and pulling it around to see if something ripped it, because she couldn't explain the burning sensation. And I lifted up her shirt and back, and she had a 4-inch diagonal claw mark between her shoulder blades, partially underneath her bra strap in the back where the hooks are.
One claw mark or?
One claw mark.
Gotcha.
One. And mm-hmm. It was beating blood. And being a nurse, you know, that welting, beating blood thing, it kind of looked like a cat scratch or like chiggers. If you've ever seen a chigger's scratch or bites, that is an initial response of a wound. Once a wound, that is always an initial, you know, for that type of thing. It doesn't happen again, even if you pick the scab off. It doesn't have that welting type of response. So I knew it was a fresh wound. And I'm asking her, I'm like, "Well, what happened? You know, did you scratch yourself on the car door getting out?" I mean, there's no furniture in this house, so there's really nothing that she could have banged into or something. So I'm trying to rationalize. And while I'm standing there looking at this, I can feel the sensation of this hairy, bristly thing I had capris on running in an 8x8 in and out of my legs. And then she started screaming again. "It got me again. It got me again." And it burns. And she then had a claw mark on her lower belly, underneath her belly button, off to the side, that was about 2.5 inches. And I told, you know, she drops the horse heads down on the counter. And I said, "Look, let's just get out of here." Well, they were targeting her because they heard them mocking. They heard her mocking them when she initially entered the room. We left so fast out of the house. I wasn't even going to bother with that sticky lock. I just locked the hand knob and pulled it closed because I figured if anybody wanted to come in the house and do anything in that house at that point, that house could take care of itself. And we were out of there. And as we're driving home, I mean, she's still seething in pain. They're still burning. And as we got, you know, home, it seemed like the burning started to lessen as we got away from there. And a lot of people, you know, might think that I had, you know, they were following us, but they didn't. There were none in the place that I was living at the time. It was only in that house. And that was another thing, too. When we got back to our mobile homes, I started looking online at paranormal groups. I figured, well, you know, there's something in there, a blessing should be able to take care of it. Now, because here I had signed on the dotted line. It's not like I could say, oh, hell no, you know, I'm out of there. I was responsible for the mortgage. It's not like I could just walk away. And being a single mother, I didn't have the money to support the ghosts in the house and buy myself another place to live. I'm already supporting two homes while the renovations are going on and we were waiting to move in the summer. So, you know, and a lot of people are like, well, I would have been out of there. Well, yeah, you know, that part of the reason why we didn't sleep there all of the time. But I started to look through to find help. I was trying to find help, and my daughter overheard me.
Wait a minute, before you go to help,
yeah.
I'm really interested to know, like, you know what you've experienced as a child, and you had a heightened sense of awareness, or you have a gift to see these spirits, and your daughter told you, you know, right from jump that she felt weird. Something was in the house. I'm just wondering, how come you decided to just ignore it, you know, ignore that and not really say, okay, let me just see if I get my own feeling and go where she went and, you know, kind of see if you should follow through with the house. I'm just wondering why you just didn't.
Part of it was because I had been looking for so long and it was such a nice house. I mean, it was beyond my wildest dreams and I really wanted that house. And I regret now not listening to my daughter, but I had for so long been denying my own, you know, feelings about that. And she wasn't specific. Like, I saw a demon downstairs, you know, it was a feeling with her. And being a teenager, you know, it could have been a lot of reasons why she didn't want to move there. Like I said, you know, it hit her that we're going to be moving 25 minutes away from her school and her friends, because at 13, friends are important, you know, or it could be, you know, another reason. She didn't specify that there was something malevolent in the house, which she was aware of. So that's why. And I really wanted the situation that we were living in and the mobile home and the trailer park that we were living in. You know, there were some drug deals going down. There was a, you know, creek right off the back of my single wide that had snakes and wharf rats in it. And I was really, really desperate to get my children into a safer environment and to let them have a yard to play in. We had no yard.
Yeah.
You know, to have the normal things that kids have. And this house was just, it was just ideal. I mean, the big backyard, and it was just a really, really pretty house. So I wanted, as a parent, to give something better to my family. And nothing this grand had come along. You know, all of the other places that I could have afforded on my income either needed major upgrading or repairs, or, you know, they had one gross bathroom, or like, you know, it was near an undesirable area, like a paper mill that was stinky, or there's a car junkyard at the end of the street. So, and this house had none of that. It was in a low tax area. It was in walking distance of a hospital. Me being a nurse, I thought that was great. I could get the exercise and walk to and from work if I worked there, or, you know, it wouldn't be a problem if the car broke down because I could still make it to work, you know, on my bike or something. And it just had too many pluses about it. And I really regret not listening. But in the same token, now that I've been away for close to over 15 years, now that was some of the things that I did gain from it spiritually, and some of the information and the learning that I received from it, and the ability to help people in that situation, has been worth it to me. in that way when I reflect back. And we were able to release the young man who was being held prisoner there by those two demons. And I believe that part of his hanging himself was the effects of those demons taunting him. I believe that.
I want to ask you something before you go into that. You said that you're stuck with the house. There's no getting out of it. You have it now. Tell me what you said. You started to look for help. What do you mean by that?
Well, I went online and I started looking for, you know, people that can bless a house or paranormal groups. And I actually got in touch with one called Georgia Paranormal, Andrew Calder. May he rest in peace. He has since passed away, but he came and he blessed the house. I also, at the time, I was working at an Episcopalian based facility, and I contacted the priest there because, you know, when you're in a situation like that, you can't just walk up and just tell regular people. They're going to think you're crazy. You have to talk to people that you have established yourself with, and they know that you are not nuts. So I had been working at this facility for over 5 years, and I went to the priest and I said, listen, I think, you know, there's a problem with my house. What do I do? And he's like, oh, well, I used to do exorcisms. He kind of gave me some guidance on that. And not only that, I went through the entire Yellow Pages. I thought, well, there's got to be a church that can help me. You know, somebody has to know what to do. You know, most of them referred me to the Catholics. Well, of course, you know, when something like that happens, you get a priest. And some of them even had the nerve to say to me that if I had been attending their church, I wouldn't have this happening in my house. I had one of them, because I mentioned that I was a single mother, and they assumed, this lady, she assumed on the phone that I was, because I was single, it was because of my ungodly activities with men, that I was probably drawing this to myself. And I'm like, I haven't even been out on a date in 4 years, so I don't know, you know, what's that got to do with anything? And their slogan is, what would Jesus do? And I'm like, you know, Jesus would have helped me. But I understand that them in their human state, they're clueless as to what to do, as I am. I forgave them for their ignorance and for their, you know, their being so pompous, you know, about their religion and unwillingness to reach out and to shut the door in my face, basically, when I was begging for help. Anyway, I did finally find a group from the Georgia Paranormal, which was with Andrew Calder. I also had contacted the minister from the Presbyterian Church that I had been a member of, you know, previously, and he remembered me, and he decided to also come and help. So I had the Presbyterian minister and the Episcopalian priest, not from my work, but Andrew Calder was a Episcopalian priest that came up from Georgia Paranormal, and they actually got pictures of the demons, and they came in, you know, the night before, and they did a complete blessing that took hours, like all day, like from 8 o'clock in the morning through to like 8 o'clock at night. And they came in ahead of time with infrared and EVP readings and all kinds of stuff, and determined that yes, I did have a very real problem in there. So supposedly the house, I had multiple denominations of religion come in there that tried to do blessings. Nothing worked. And finally I had them come in to do the blessing, and they reassured me that it was then at that point safe to take my children back. Just to back up a little, I had stopped taking my children over after spending the second night in the house because I saw one of the demons, and my son woke up with bite marks on his legs that were not there the night before when he had taken his bath. He had on his little Bob the Builder pajamas or whatever they were, Thomas Engine or something. So he had on shorts, and I would have seen them, you know, on his legs. There were three bite marks on his legs. Two on one leg, one on the other, and they looked like animal bite marks, like a dog, but they were smaller than my dog. I had a little schnauzer who was with us that night that didn't want to go into the house. I literally had to carry her into the house as she darted from room to room looking for an exit, and later appeared in the kitchen doorway shivering. I thought she was cold, so I wrapped her up in a towel because that's all I had. But it turned out an event had happened with the dog and my children downstairs in that family room that I wasn't told about until much later. So, again, I think that you know, since we did not move in there, that, or we only spent the two nights, if we had saturated ourselves in more of that negativity, I'm sure that the outcomes probably would have been less favorable than they were, because we had somewhere to go. You're most vulnerable when you're sleeping. So we had somewhere to go that was safe to sleep and only, you know, affected by the presences in the house when we would go over there. So I stopped taking my kids over there until they did the blessing. So they did the blessing. Like I said, they got pictures and they told me that it was safe to go back into the house. So I took the kids.
I want to ask you something before you start. Yes. There. You kept calling it a demon. How are you sure that, you know, it was a demon in that house?
For one thing, I saw it. It was the most horrific thing I've ever seen. There were two of them. One of them I saw in the stairwell the second night that we spent the night there. I started doing things in the rooms. I wanted to finish one, so I decided to finish the master bathroom. So I was painting the ceiling and the walls because I could do it quickly, like in 2 hours. It was a very small room. And when I went to the kitchen, it was around 11:30 to clean my paintbrushes. And as you come back out of the kitchen, there was a black wrought iron railing, which would keep you from falling over onto the descending stairs off of the landing, where the double entry doors were, split level house where the stairs would ascend and descend. So as I'm walking past that rail, I see out of my peripheral vision this thing. It was wolf-like. It was standing on its haunches. Its feet were moving so fast underneath it that you could just see flickering. It had a large bushy tail like a squirrel. And it had rabbit ears, long rabbit ears, but they were turned on each side of the head, and they were turned backwards, grazing over its shoulders. But, you know, just on the sides like the FTD man. But these ears were, like I said, they were turned backwards, and it was kind of hunched with its arms a little bit smaller. It had long, dirty claw marks. And I saw it race across the white double entry doors and up the ascending stairs in front of me, because I was walking past that area and hadn't quite crossed that area yet. And then it came up in front of me and shot down the hallway to the master bedroom. And I stood there frozen. I'm like, what is that? You know, it wasn't something from this earth. I can promise you that. It was the most horrific thing I've ever seen. And it had a narrowing to its face, almost like a dragon. And it had large nares, like a horse, nose openings that took up almost the whole end of the face. And I mean, I can draw it. It was a dull brownish color. The skin kind of like hung over the bones, so you could see sunken in areas. It was, and the feeling was so evil, that just the negativity and the feeling. So I'm standing there frozen, rationalizing, and again, thinking, okay, I've been painting, there are fumes. I haven't eaten anything in a while. My blood sugar can be low. Maybe a bicycle rode underneath a street light and that caused that reflection, but it would have been impossible for it to come from the bottom across and then upward. It wouldn't have been able to reflect like that. But I'm still trying to rationalize. And all of a sudden I hear my dog growling at the end of the hallway where that thing headed. My kids had, we had blow up mattresses, and the kids had drugged the two queen size blow up mattresses in the master bedroom. And they were watching Hidalgo on the TV in between, and they had fallen asleep. And my dog, I hear her ferociously growling, and that kind of knocked me out of my delusion that I thought I was having at that moment, you know, because I'm like, there's nothing that explains this. I'm seeing things. So I obviously need sleep or something like that. But yet I was still almost numbed out from the fear of it in that way. But when I heard my dog growling, like I had never heard her that ferociously growling before, I immediately went down the hallway, and my dog, her name was Sally, it was a little schnauzer dog, was standing in the doorway of the master bedroom where my children were sleeping, facing the door, and she had her hair up on the back of her neck, and she was growling. Even as I approached, she didn't stop growling. She did put her ears back for a minute, and I tried to pet her and soothe her, but she was fixated on that door. So I thought maybe, you know, she needed to go out, maybe because the windows were opened, and living in a mobile home, that's an invitation. That's not a luxury that you can have very often, to have your windows open at night when you sleep. We were up on a second floor. So I took her out, and again, I had to carry her back into the house, and she raced down the hallway and nestled in between the kids. And I went ahead and took my shower and crawled in with the kids too. And that was the next morning when my son woke up with the bite marks on his legs. And my daughter that morning, I asked her how she had slept, and she said, I didn't. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, I felt like something was standing in the doorway staring at us all night long. So we all, you know, got ready and left, and I took them to school, and I didn't take them back after that point, because it was within that week that I had the worker come and had to go back because my friend Ellen had been, you know, to help me get the air conditioner out, and then she was clawed, and I knew I couldn't. Actually, something happened before that earlier in that day where I actually saw the young man coming up the stairs. I was in the hallway painting. The young man was putting the wooden flooring down in my son's bedroom. I was just on the opposite side, the wall on the opposite side of the bedroom. So I'm in the hallway, he's in the bedroom, and I'm painting. And I see this young man. He had brown hair. Hair was parted down the middle. It was a short feathered cut. He had on jeans with no socks, penny loafers. He had on a white Oxford type shirt. And he had a very ruddy complexion, like maybe he had a bad acne problem or something. And I turned, and he was so real, and I saw him so solid that I said, did you knock? I thought he had just walked in the house, that he might be some confused person or think that the house was still, you know, for sale because it sold so quickly. And then when I looked at him again, when I looked at where he was coming up the stairs again, there was nothing there. And of course, the young man that was putting down the flooring in the bedroom responds, because he thinks I'm talking to him. And he's like, no, I might have dropped something, you know, type thing. And, you know, in response to my saying, did you knock? So I left that day to pick up my kids. And I knew at that point that there was a ghost in the house. That was before I saw the first demon and, you know, some other issues that had gone on in the house. And I was sitting in the car line to pick up my kids, and I get a call from the young man that's in the house. And he said, I have to leave right now. He said, there's something weird about this house that I've never experienced in my life, and I have to leave. And then the line dropped, and I couldn't get a hold of him for almost, you know, a half an hour or so, to ask him what happened. And he's like, oh, it was nothing, but I'd really rather be there when you're there. He didn't want to be there by himself. So I had explained to him, because I had already had two other workers that ditched me, but they had reasons for it. Like, one was in between construction work, and so when it wasn't raining, he would be doing work for somebody else, and then he didn't come back. Another one, some family member went into the hospital and he didn't come back. But the second one with the hospital, you know, the family member in the hospital, he didn't even come back and get his DeWalt tools. He didn't come back to get paid, nothing. He told me to leave his tools out in a box in front of the garage, and he would come and pick them up. And they sat there for 10 days. And finally, I put them back in the garage, and his number was disconnected. So I couldn't get a hold of him to reach out.
Was he the only one that... I mean, did all of them do that, or was it just him?
No, the first one also did not come back, but his reasoning was that, you know, work had opened up for him, as he had told me that he would do me in between.
Okay.
And that was a reasonable, you know, that was reasonable. So I wouldn't have suspected anything. And then the second one, you know, too, he put in part of the floor and then disappeared. And, you know, told me that about the hospital thing. And of course, that makes sense. That also was reasonable. But the fact that he never came back to get his tools, I found out by the third one. There were four of them total. The third one was my friend's cousin. And that's how I found out that while he was in the house, he was putting in the flooring after I had left. And he said that he went to reach for his tools, and the tools were gone. They weren't there. He was on a rolling garden seat, and he reached for me. He had a trowel. He had a mallet and a block of wood, because it was tongue and groove with adhesive, to kind of tap it into place to make sure that it was secure. And he said that he scooted over and that the tools weren't there. And that all of a sudden he looks over by the bedroom door, which was probably a good 7 feet from where he was. And they were lined up paralleling each other in front of the door. And of course, this spooks him because he's like, I know I didn't get up and go over there, you know? So he thought that I had returned and that I was playing a joke on him. So he got up off of his seat and started calling into the hallway for me to, you know, to see if I was there, and picked up his tools. And because he was kind of rattled from it, he went ahead and he turned on the bedroom light, and he had this battery operated radio that he turned on for music. And he sits back down and goes to put in a additional piece of the flooring, and the light turns itself off. His transistor radio turns itself off, and he hears the tools scooting behind him and physically turns and sees them lining up 1, 2, 3, right in front of the door, exactly where he had originally picked them up from, in the same position. Everything was identical. And he said that he couldn't get out of there fast enough. I had to find out that story through my friend, who was his cousin, because he didn't want to talk about it. But I had mentioned to her, I said, well, you know, what made him leave so fast? Would you please ask him? I have a feeling it might have been something paranormal. And my friend, who was a nurse working with me at the time, said that she would. So 4th of July came, and her cousin, the guy that had been working in my house, came to her house, and he had a few beers. You know, so he was feeling a little talkative. And so she asked him, and that's what he told her. He said, you know, Lynn is a really, really nice lady. I feel bad that I didn't, you know, go back and finish the job. But he used words that I can't use on the radio. It starts with an F. He says, that house is blank, blank up. He said, and, you know, after he told her what had happened, she said, even while he was talking about it, that he was shaking, that it still had that much of a, you know, an effect on him. I did have a fourth worker that did come and finish, no problem. But he was stoned all the time. So, you know, he carried his own little pack of minions with him, and they were all buddies. So, you know, I didn't care that he was stoned all the time, as long as he didn't do it around me and my kids. You know, he did beautiful work, and he did complete the job. So I was able to then, you know, sell the house.
Yeah.
So
stop right there. We're running out of time, and I want to try to kind of wrap this up for listeners so they'll go get your book and find out what else happened to you. I want to go ahead and there's one other phenomenon I want to talk to you about before we go, but make it about 5 minutes, okay? About like okay. That, then we got to wrap it up. But I want to ask you about the disembodied voices. I do find that very interesting. I've had one other guest on this particular show talk about it. But can you tell us, like, you mentioned something about that earlier, that your daughter was hearing voices, but what else was happening to you? Did you ever hear voices that would actually answer you back? Like, you'll speak to it and it'd actually give you an answer?
It wasn't so much like that. The thing is about them is they can mimic, and they can make themselves sound like a person that you recognize. And not only that, there's an intelligence to it. They, in that first day, the spirits in the house understood that I was the mother, and that Brittany was Brittany, and that my son was Austin. So they knew us all by name and what our category was. So when my daughter was hearing them call Brittany, it sounded like my voice, but it wasn't me. When I was in the hallway and heard them calling, I was up on the ladder, and I feel this draft, and I hear them go, mommy, mommy, mommy. And it sounded like a young child, and it was raining outside. I thought maybe there was a kid outside stuck in the rain looking for his mom, but it freaked me a little bit because it tugged my hair as it passed the second time, the breeze in the opposite direction. So I actually got off my ladder and went looking. And then there were, you know, the other incident when I actually started having, I had a Native American woman come in to do a blessing on the house, and the wolf-like demon actually came to the top of the stairs, and he was, that didgeridoo sound came with him when he communicated, and she apparently could understand what he was saying, but it sounded like that weird sound to me. I couldn't make out what he was saying, and she would say something to him, and you would hear that noise in response. And then she would say something else to him, and that noise would come back in response. And so it wasn't like, you know, I would say hello, and they'd say hello back. It was these intermittent sounds of like calling mommy, you know, calling my daughter Brittany and different things like that. And of course, other people that came into the house also witnessed and had paranormal activity where they saw and heard things in that house, my children, some of my children's friends and things like that. But that book is filled with that. That house had so many things happen with it. Like I said, I was never able to move into it.
Unbelievable. This has been really, really good. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to bring you back for your next couple of books. I want you to go ahead, Lynn, and tell my listeners where they can find out more information about you or any other projects you may be working on.
Okay, well, I have a website. It's lynnmonet.com. I have a lot of people that reach out to me because they have activity in their house. I do have some people all over the United States, hopefully in your area if you need it, that can help you, and they are free, other than for supplies and things that they have to pay out of pocket, which of course they get reimbursed for, but they're coming to your house and taking care of things are free. But my books are sold. I have a website, www.lynnmonet.com. I have my Omnipresent book, which is the first book of the Omnipresent series. I also have written a second book, Omnipresent, What Happens Next, which are both available right now. I have a book called Colors of Heaven, Beginnings Never End, which is a beautiful story about death, dying, and afterlife, which I'll be happy to come on another time and talk about. That book is in the works. It's not quite available yet. And there will be more books to the Omnipresent series because I've had more experiences with a haunting since I have moved from that home that are stories in themselves. Again, these are written. I wrote these things very matter-of-fact and straightforward so that if I ever had to sit on a lie detector test, they can test me because I'm telling the truth. There's nothing fabricated. It is what it is. But it is unnerving. I opened the book with the Lord's Prayer. I close it with the Lord's Prayer. You can use any prayer you want. I had all of the pages in the book blessed, so there's a cross at the bottom of every page because my intention was to bring the information to people for awareness. With drug addiction can be attachments, with mental illness can be attachments. For people to have the awareness that there could be something else, you know, that's causing some of their issues, and it may be something in their home. So yeah, I hope to help the community with that. My books are on Amazon. I ask you to please, you know, get them from my website. It's the same price. The shipping is free. Listening to this show, you can email me. I'll even take a dollar off of the book. I have an Amazon. Please buy it from me, from my website. I would appreciate that very much. And thank you so much for having me, Crystal. I've really, really enjoyed doing this. I would love to come back. People can also reach me through that website. There's an email, there's a contact there if you need to email me about anything. And I do still answer my own emails at this point. So you will get me. It may take me a little while, but I will get back to you. Usually I try to get back to you within 72 hours max. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. The book again is called Omnipresent, and that is available. It's available on Amazon, but please go over to Lynn's website and buy it from her and not from any other place so that you can help her out. I will have all the links in the show notes for you, Lynn. Many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. And please reach out again. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you for listening. I invite you to follow my other podcast, Mysterious Radio. Please share this show with others that are interested in the paranormal. I want to give a special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Paranormal Fears.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
Chumba.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.